Yud Gimel Nissan, 13th of April. Rabbi Yechiel Emanuel, the military Maccus.
There's a pasuk in the Torah where the Rabbi Shalom tells us one of the Sheish Tchiras, Raki Shom Elecho Shmoy Nafshcho Mo'oy, Pen Tishkach Es Hadvorim Asher Ro'o Einecho. One must be very careful not to forget Es Hadvorim Asher Ro'o Einecho. We mustn't forget the things that we saw. And the Mepharshim say that that's talking about Mamad Har Sinai in particular. But if those are the things that we saw, we particularly today didn't really see it, not with our Leibed Dika eyes as we are today. So our neshamas were there, or we were present in some sort of way or form, but our point, we weren't there ourselves. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used this as one of the points where he would say that Mamad Har Sinai, Kriyas Yamsuf, the Esamakas, are all things which we need to use the power of imagination that we have to depict within our mind's eye that which Chazal described to us in very vivid terms as to what exactly happened. And the Esamakas, as they were and as they took place, are one of those points where, besides for the fact that Chazal tell us that there was a two-pronged mission that each Makkah had, number one, that it was there to inflict the tribulation and trials on the Mitzrim that they needed to receive, and secondly, it was for Klal Yisrael in order for us to be able to strengthen our emunah. And the Esamakas themselves, as we said, besides for Mamad Har Sinai, Kriyas Yamsuf, the Esamakas are also 10 makas which we are meant to be able to use in order to strengthen our emunah. In order to be able to do that, as children, we use the power of imagination that we have to a great degree. And it's an extremely strong power of imagination that we all do have. But as we grow older and realize that reality is not as we imagine it, so we start to use our power of imagination much less. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the Koyach HaTziur, this power of imagination, we've got to continue to use. And by depicting in our mind's eye, and having a vivid picture in our mind of what took place and how it took place, we are able to strengthen our emunah and remember it with much more clarity. When it comes to Pesach, so particularly if one is leading a Seder, then this is a very opportune moment when it comes to the Esamakas. You're just before the three things that if you don't say them, then lo yotzi yedeichei vasei. And sometimes during Magid, there may have been, through all the psukim, people who have become not as engaged as they were when they asked the Manishana at the beginning. So the Esamakas is always a very good way of drawing people back in. Besides the fact that it's a good thing to know about generally as to what happened and why it happened, and perhaps the midah keneged midah of some of these things themselves. So let's see how much time we have and how much we can get through from the Makas. And this is a compilation of Medroshim, Chazal, that I've put together over here, which hopefully will be insightful. The Yalkut Shemoni, when it begins to talk about the Makas, describes it in the following way. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu was on his way in to visit Paray for the first time. And Paray had a palace where he had built a palace with 400 different entrances. At each entrance, says the Yalkut, there was a pair of lions, a pair of bears, and other wild animals. And the only way that a person could get through into the entrance was, in that time, a person had to be a Baal Yecholos and had to be able to afford a substantial amount of meat, which he could take and throw in front of these ravenous animals. And during the time, it has to be enough meat there for them to be busy devouring it, during which he could make a run through and get through that entrance. And Moshe Rabbeinu arrives, and these lions become like docile puppies, and they start to lick him. Moshe Rabbeinu goes to the chains that were tying him to the walls and unchains them, and walks in one after the other until he comes eventually into the throne chamber of Paray. And says the Medrash, when he arrives in that throne chamber, Paray straight away says to him, "What are you doing here?" So he says, "I've come." The Rabbeinu Shlom said, "Shalach ami v'yachoygu li bamidbar." Use that pasuk first. But Paray says to him, "Yeah, but what about the lions?" Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Oh, the lions, 1 minute." He goes out, rega echad, and he comes and he brings the lions back in with him. Says the Medrash, Paray became so full of dread and so full of pachad that he needed to go to the bathroom. Now, in order to picture this in with clarity, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, one of the missions he was sent on was to go Hashkim Baboiker, and go down to the Nile when Paro is on his way there, because Paro had projected himself as being a god who never needed to use the bathroom, and he would go every morning to the Nile, so he would hold himself back for the entire day and wait till the next morning. And the next morning Moshe Rabbeinu went to greet him. One can imagine the Medrash says Paro was only an amah high, Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amas high. So we know there was some sort of confrontation there, but one imagines that you had someone who was 10 times the height of Paro, who himself was an interesting phenomenon, a person who was only an amah high, and every time he went down to the Nile, the water came up to greet him because of the bracha of Yaakov Avinu. So he was, in the eyes of people, he was a fascinating phenomenon, and they treated him as a god because of that. And Moshe Rabbeinu comes, and he looks down at him, and he says to him, where are you going? And Paro looks up and says, I'm going to the water. To Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're not going to any water. He says, but I have to go now. So he says, what are you going for? He says, I have to go, the water has to come up. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're not going down to any water. And there's this vikuach between them, until Moshe Rabbeinu exposes the fact that Paro is actually going to use it as his lavatory. Going back to this story, the lions arrive, and as soon as the melochim and the sarim of other nations who were present in the court, in the throne chamber of Paro see that, they remove the crowns from their heads and bow down to Moshe Rabbeinu. Because there was an unbelievable feat that he had been able to achieve by getting through all these entrances and then bringing the lions in with him. Paro became so full of dread, he needed to go to the toilet. Says the Medrash, now the assumption is that this probably he needed to go other times during his lifetime as well. But he suffered the pain and waited till the next morning. So I assume that now he obviously was not able to control himself, and the embarrassment of him remaining on his throne would have been far greater than him running out and going to a toilet. And he goes out to the Beis HaKisei, and he comes there, says the Medrash, and the Rebbe Shammai prepared for him 12 guests, 12 achbarim, 12 rats, which bit him, as the Medrash says, b'chol mokoim moishavai. And Paro began to scream. So the sarim, the melochim, they hear the screaming, they come running out to see what's going on. And Paro is exposed as being this gentleman, this god who no longer the god that they thought he was. Fascinatingly, Paro manages to have the oimetz halev, the strength of heart, to go back and sit on his throne and again challenge Moshe Rabbeinu, what are you doing here? So Moshe says, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, Shalach Ami V'yavduni. So Paro says, Mi Hashem, he's never sent me a letter, Lo Shalach Li Yigeres, Lo Shalach Li Dorin, he's never sent me any presents. Moshe Rabbeinu says, the presents what you want, there's a year of presents that are going to come your way. And they're going to come in three semesters, three groups of presents, Tetzach, Adash, V'achav. Interestingly, just as a Maima Amuzga, I heard recently that Rabbi Huda Rabbi Loi, we know, was Rosh HaMadabrim B'chol Mokim. Why was Rabbi Huda Rabbi Loi Rosh HaMadabrim B'chol Mokim? The Gemara Shabbos says because he always spoke about the Romans in a positive way, therefore he was the Rosh HaMadabrim B'chol Mokim. I heard another chat is that Rabbi Huda Rabbi Loi was the one who took the Esamakis and made it into a concise, the Tzach Hadash B'achav. So he was Rosh HaMadabrim B'chol Mokim because he kept it short. That's, I'll call upon him, Paro is now going to get these three lots of makas, and there's going to be a lesson for him, and each of them are midah keneged midah. They correspond to things that the Mitzrayim have done to Klal Yisrael, and they happen themselves. The first was the makah of dam. A makah of dam, the Medrash tells us a variety of different things, and if we imagine what went on there making some sort of tzir, and with our imagination of what took place, the makah of dam started that first of all, the whole Nile became blood. And one could think, and Paro did say at the beginning, that it wasn't really blood. So the Medrash said, it must be that they coloured the water somehow. They've used some sort of magic to colour the water. And Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, no, there's actually going to be, it's not going to be coloured water. If it's coloured water, you can have an aquarium with coloured water and the fish still remain alive. Here, the fish are all going to die because the texture, the feel, the taste, the smell, it's all going to be real blood. So it becomes real blood. And a mother walks into her child's bedroom and comes and sees under the cot a pool of blood. And she screams, what's going on? What's happening? And she wonders what it is. But what happened, the Chazal say, Moshe Rabbeinu told him, it's going to be be'etzim uva'avonim. That means that the wood and the stones were schwitzing blood. And therefore, from anything that was made of wood or of stone, there was blood, there was a moisture of blood that was emanating from it. So mother sees that and she wonders what it is, but that was the beginning of the makkah for her at home. Her husband hears that, so what does he do? Naturally, the first thing he'll do is run to his mosque. He comes in there, he just opens the door and he sees blood on the floor. So he runs over to the Avodah Zarah, and Avodah Zarah, whether it was wood or of stone, it itself was bleeding. And it was showing to them that there was no control over themselves. We famously know, the Medrash says, that the Mitzri came and he asked the Jew for his, he asked, give me your glass of water. The Chazal tell us that a month ago, this had been a taskmaster of the Jew. And this Jewish person didn't yet have the strength of character to challenge this taskmaster. And he walked over to him, and he said to him, give me that cup of water. So what is this? Till now, this was a person who was frightened for his life. He gave him the cup of water. Say Chazal, he gave him the cup of water, the mitzri took it, and as he put it to his mouth, it became blood. So he gave it back to the Jew. So the Yid says to him, listen, I'm sorry, but it's not in my hands. So he went and he found, as we know, he found two little straws or made of pieces of wood or bamboo, and they used it, and it were both blood. And the only way was that he'd said to him, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu said that if you buy it from us, then it will be water. So Chazal say from that they became wealthy. The Yidden became wealthy. The Chassam Sofer says a fascinating thing. He says there was some Mitzrayim who came along and said, listen, I can't afford the price that you want for water. And you can imagine the price of water went sky high as the Yidden makes good business. And he knew how to charge the Mitzrayim who'd been giving him hassle for the last 280 years at least. So the Yid said to him, says the Chassam Sofer, he said, listen, okay, you don't want to pay this price. I can give it to you for a lesser price. But you have to go down to the Nile, fill up your barrel with water, come back, I'll touch the barrel, and it will become water. So the Mitzri had no choice. He didn't want to pay the price of the Yid's water from what he had. So he had to go down and he filled it up. So the Chassam Sofer, that's Pshat in the Pasuk, Venilu Mitzrayim, the Mitzrayim will get tired to find water min ha-yoyev. The lashon of the pasuk is v'nilu Mitzrayim nimtzamayim min ha-yoyev. They're going to get tired. Why? Because they went down to Shlep. Says the Chassam Sofer, they brought it back. The Yid touched it for a nominal fee, and it became water. And the Mitzrayim began to drink from it, but he suddenly realized it's full of dead fish, very bad smelling dead fish. So he came back to the Yid and he said, "It's a mekach toz." He said, listen, I did my part. You asked me to make it water, I touched it, it became water. You took it from the wrong place. You've got to find it, not from a source where there's dead fish. And that's when it says that they went, Vayachburu kol Mitzrayim, Sevivois hayoir mayim lishtois. Now they went to dig around the oil to find water to drink, because they wanted to find water that didn't contain in it any fish, so that it would be pure water. That's Zoshti in Chassam Sofer. And that was one of the other parts of the Makkah that's hinted to again in the words of the Pasuk, but every detail is hinted to in the Torah Shebikshav, and Chazal elaborated for us in the Torah Shebaal Peh. Why did the Rebbeinu Shem do Makkas Dam? So there's a variety of different reasons that are brought. The Medrash Rabbah says one of the most famous reasons is they threw the Jewish children into the Yair. So this Yair now became smitten. This was something that they used as a tool against us, and therefore it got destroyed for them, and they weren't able to use it. Another one is that they spilt the blood of Jewish people, therefore their water became like blood. They didn't allow Klal Yisrael to tovel, therefore the source of where they would have toveled became blood. Pare, because the water always came up to him, he managed to convince everyone, Li Yoiri Vani Asisim. It's mine and I created it. So Rebbeinu Shlomo, well, I'll show you that it's not yours, you've got no control over it. And even the Mitzrayim, who believed that the Yoir itself was some sort of God, they got shown here that doesn't have any power either. The Kliyoka says an interesting thing. It says that they wanted to be Mevatel from Klal Yisrael, the bracha of Yidgu L'Roiv, which is a bracha that he should be like dogim. And Mimela, therefore, he says that's why the Yair got smitten, that there were no dogim there. We also know that Paro, he got saras, and his doctors told him that if you shecht 150 children in the morning and 150 children in the evening, and you bathe in their blood, which only a meshugna is going to believe that is a way of refuah, then you'll have a refuah. And he did it. He did it because of his sin of Klal Yisrael. So over here, all the water became blood that's from a sefer called Matame HaShulchan, on the Haggadah. And that's why that became blood. That was the Makkah of Dam, and that was corresponding exactly to what they did. Rashi brings the famous Medrash Tanchuma, which says that it was actually in the same way that if an army would lay siege to a city, then there would be certain things that would happen in a process. So that's what happened over here. First is you cut off their water supply. The next thing is you make noises to make sure they can't sleep and they become with pachad. Then you send in the ammunition, and that was how the Makkah is developed. That's Rashi Al HaTorah. Okay, moving on to the Makkah of Tzfadea. Tzfadea, there's a huge amount. When it just looks even in today's sources that you can find of how many frogs and different types of frogs there are. And they all, says the Medrash, they all, kol mini Tzfadea, converged on Mitzrayim. And Pare was zocheh that he got the me'ulos shebayim, he got the best. What does he mean, Pare got the best? So there are a few things about these Tzfadim. One is that Tzfadea, there is a type of Tzfadea that doesn't stop croaking for 24-7, it croaks. It's just croaking the whole time. And that noise prevents a person from being able to sleep. And Pare was given the Ma'ulay Shebahen, that means he got the ones that croak the loudest, and the ones that are large, that if they jump into a person, they can actually knock over sometimes their prey, or knock over an attacker. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky says, if you look in the Perek Shira, that Tzfardea says, the Tzfardea Omer, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus HaLeilam Voed. That's the Shvach that he says. He said, that's referring to this Tzfardea that doesn't stop croaking for 24 hours. And he's always saying, Shevach, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus HaLeilam Voed. When? Lo'ilam Voed, the whole time. 24-7, the Tzfardea is saying this, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus HaLeilam Voed. And we know that Ibn Ezra famously says that it was Urdu Anaya, these were actually alligators, and that's why afterwards he says that the Larayak by Yoritisha'ana, they went back and they remained there, only those ones remained. But Chazal tell us that the Tzfardea, when it came, it covered the face of Mitzrayim, the land of Mitzrayim. That means that a person got out of bed the next morning, in place of putting his feet into his slippers, he actually found that he was putting his foot on something that felt like jelly. When he looked down on the floor, that's what it was. There were tzfardim all around him, all over the place, and they caused him the terrible agmas nefesh by not only being inside him, inside his bed, inside the place where he ate, but they actually went inside the people as well. The Medrash tells us that Pare convened a meeting of his, an emergency meeting of his cabinet to decide what do we do about this tzfardim? How are we going to sort it out? And at which point the Rebbeinu Shlomo made that as he began to say, what are we going to do about the, before he could even say the word Tzfardea, a Tzfardea jumped out of his mouth. And the Medrash continues to say that a Tzfardea then from inside Pare called out to the other Tzfardim in others of his ministers and said, until when do we need to remain inside these people? And the reply came back, until Ben Amram tells us, till Moshe Rabbeinu Ben Amram, the Nevi Hashem, tells us that the Rebbeinu Shlomo wants us to go out. So that itself exposed Pare here as not only again being, he wasn't in control of his own Nile, he wasn't in control of himself, and he wasn't in control of the things that were going on around him. The Medrash Rabbah has an interesting, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Kol Mokim Shehoisa Shom Ofer, wherever you had earth, Vahoisa Tipa Shel Mayim Boi, and a little bit of water fell into that earth, Hayonaset Tzfardea, it became a Tzfardea. If you say like this, then the people who had houses that didn't have offer and they were tiled, then they wouldn't get tzfardea. We know it. And it went into everyone's houses. That means that tzfardea didn't just come from the rivers that were on the face of the land that you could see, but it came from the tahoim, which is the wellsprings underground that we don't even see. And it said to the Shayish, make place that I can. And the tiles cracked open. And the Medrash says that it didn't just make that the tiles broke, but it also exposed where they were hiding things that they kept in safekeeping. That's where the Tzfardea came up. So the Makkah over here wasn't just that these things came on their own, but there was a mysterious nevesh that took place on the part of the Tzfardea. They went in ways and into places that were, in a certain way, a sakon of there. The Gemara tells us, the Medrash says as well, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, when they were thrown into the Kivshan Ha'esh, where they were told, if you don't bow down to the Tzelem, you'll get thrown into the Kivshan Ha'esh, they make for themselves a kal v'chomer from the Tzfardea. That if the Tzfardea went, they went to Mishael Yisrael, Ubetanu Recha, and they jumped into the ovens, then that must be that if that's what something that the Tzfardea doesn't have Bechira, doesn't have Tzchava Oynesh, but they did that because to make a Kiddush Hashem, then that's for sure what we have to do. That was one of the lessons that was taken from there. And that's what Rishon Levi Diskin explains at length, exactly what the concept of Mesiras Nefesh that is to be learned from them. There's an interesting Sifse Chachomim that says that when Moshe Rabbeinu came to daven by Tzfardea that he should go away, after Pare, in his madness, was prepared to survive a whole extra day of Tzfardea, just to try and show that Moshe Rabbeinu was actually a magician and not someone who knew what the Rebbeinu Shalom was doing. They said to him, Moshe Rabbeinu said, when do you want me to daven that it should go away? Now, the way the magic works is that you can't decide for something new to happen, but you can know when the time of something is likely or around about when it's going to happen. and say the Mepharshim, and then you can tell someone, listen, Tzvadeh is going to come in a day. So Pari was convinced, when Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, do you want me to daven it should go away? He was convinced, Moshe knows it's about to go away any second. And he's asking me, do you want to daven? I'll say yes, because I'm desperate for it to go. And then it will go away, and it will make out as if he made it go away. You know what? I'm prepared to suffer another whole day, even though it was something that he said was terrible. But just to show that he's going to say, when do I want it to go? I'll say tomorrow, and it will go away today. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, fine, you want it to go tomorrow. I'll daven now that it should go away tomorrow, just to show him that it's the koyach ha-tefillah, and it's got nothing to do with, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu did. But the pasuk says that, Vayitzak Moshe, here Moshe cried out. But none of the other makas does it say, Vayitzak Moshe. Says the Sifse Chachamim, you know why? Because the noise of the tefillah was so loud, and there's a halacha, that when a person davens, you have to hear what you're saying. And Moshe Rabbeinu Pasha wouldn't have been able to hear himself had he not cried out. That is how loud that a person himself speaking couldn't hear what he himself was saying. That's how loud the sound was, and that's what caused them the tzar. One of the reasons for tzvadeh, the midah keneged midah, was Chazal say, and the mitzvim would come. The medrash lekach toiv says the mitzvim would come and wake up the Eden in the middle of the night and shouting and screaming. So the Rebbeinu said to them, "That's what you did, and that's the type of way you did it. I'll make sure that from the noise you can't sleep." That's what the medrash lekach toiv says with the midah keneged midah. The Eliyahu Rabbah says that they would tell the Jewish people, go out and collect for me shkotzim and ramosim. I like to have these different types of shkotzim and ramosim, and you go find them out in the fields and in the forest and bring them back for me. The Rishon said, if you want them, I'll provide them for you yourselves. And that was the Midah Keneged Midah, that they got them themselves. The Kiliyoka says that Pari said, Mi Hashem Asher Eshma Bekoiloi. Who's Hashem that I should listen to his voice? The Rebbeinu said, I'll give you a noise that you'll have to listen to, whether you like it or not, and that's why he sent him. Let's move on to kinim. Kinim, Chazal say that there were 14 different types of kinim. Some of them were the size of an egg of a goose, an egg of a chicken. The Chidor writes that there were 10 kabin of kinim for every single person. But you work it out, it's 14.4 kilo, berach, 14 and a half kilo of kinim that were personally for each, covering each person. 14 and a half bags of sugar bags of kinim that were personally for each person. The Netziv brings from a Yalkut Shimoni that they, when they bit a person, or they actually entered into their skin like arrows, there was the pain that they themselves caused. And Chazal tells us as well, the Medrash says that there was the depth of 2 amas. When you walked around, the earth itself became 2 amas high of kinim. I once met someone in Wales who told me that he was the first person, he didn't just tell me, he was the first person to climb Mount Everest without oxygen. Interesting person. One of the things he told me is, when you get to a certain height, the snow is so powdery that you can't walk in it, you have to wade through it. And part of the training is, you've got to learn how to wade through snow, not swimming, but similar to swimming, like walking. And that's what the Mitzrayim had to do over here. If you had 2 amas high, that's 1.2 meters of kinim swarming wherever you went, then not only could they not get into their beds or sit down anywhere, but just to get around, the pain of itself would have been enough to survive, and being able to try and get around. We know that this is where the Chartumim said, Etzba Elohim Hi, which I heard, I don't know where the Makor is, but Etzba is Rosh HaTevis, Ein Tzorech Biur Oid. It's the Rebbeinu Shalom. Ein Tzorech Biur Oid, that's Etzba. It's the Rebbeinu Shalom, there's nothing more to explain, we can't do this, and we've seen here clearly that this is the Rebbeinu Shalom. Interestingly, if you look in Tehillim, in Kapitel Kufhei, where it speaks about the Makkos, it says there, Omar vayovoy oroiv kinim b'chol gevulam. And we know that kinim preceded oroiv. So what does it mean? The Dumna Magid says, a marshal, he says there was a person who made a chasna for his daughter. And he was a prominent person in the town, and a Baal Yecholis, he wanted to make sure that each night, each shavrach was made for a different group of people in the town. So the one night was made, the first, the chasna itself was for Mishpacha, and then each night there would be for the medical people in town, and then there would be for the Balid Stocker in town, and then there would be for the Shnaros. There was one person who turned up at two events, and one of the showroom there, one of the guards, said to him, hey, 1 second, you've been here already. So he said, look, the chasna I came because I'm Mishpacha, so I came as my invite as a Mishpacha, and tonight is for the Shnaros, so I came tonight as a Shnara. Says the Dubna Magid, the Kinim, they were invited as kinim, so they came as kinim. When it came to Orev, it was for all the chayas. So I'm invited now as a chaya. So they came back for then as well. So in the Makkah of Orev, there were kinim there as well. Why were they kinim? The Eliyahu Rabbah says that they forced the Yidden to go cleaning up the offer from all over the place, and with no tachlis for it at all. So Rebbeinu Shlomo made that offer itself turned, that dust itself turned to kinim. And another reason was that they prevented the Jewish people from ever taking, from ever washing themselves. And when a person doesn't wash for an extended period of time, working hard and schwitzing, then they contract lice. So Rabbi Yishmael said, that's what you made my children have to suffer. I'm going to make you suffer that in return. Orev, we move on to Orev. Orev was all different types of wild animals came, and we know v'gamo adoma shem aleo. That's the famous pshat that they came with their environment. Why is that? The Gemara in Erevin says that a dog, if it comes to a new place, it doesn't bark for 7 years. Because it doesn't feel comfortable, it doesn't feel at home. The Rebbe Shalom wanted that these chayes, whether they were there, the Yalka brings two shitters, whether they were there for 24 days or 7 days. But either way, they were there for a relatively short period of time. The Rebbe Shalom wanted them to feel at home and do their job 100%. And therefore he sent them within their natural habitat, and they went throughout Mitzrayim in that type of way. The Vilna Gaon says that, the Gemara in Chulin says there's a certain type of animal called the Adnei Haaretz. Adnei Haaretz is an animal, a very, very fiercely wild animal, and it's joined by a cord from its stomach or belly button to the ground. And the only way that you can kill it, you can't go anywhere near it. And it's good to, it bounces off this cord, and it's able to extend that cord to quite a large, I think 50 amos or something like that. The only way to kill it is to be able to shoot an arrow and through the cord sever its connection to the ground. That's the only way of killing it. So the Rebbe Shem wanted this Adnei Haaretz, one of the Chayas, it should come for Orev as well. So he brought the ground that it's connected with, and it came along with it as well. The Imre Emes said that the Pari afterwards, after Makkah of Orev, says to Klal Yisrael, says to Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, you can go and serve Hashem, but Oretz in the land. And what was it? If you're asking, we told you, we're going to the Midbar for 3 days. What is he saying now, but Oretz? So he said, imagine what's just happened here to Mitzrayim. You've just had a polar bear coming with its environment of freezing cold, and it's moved across this area of land. Shortly afterwards comes a cobra from the Sahara environment over the same piece of land that completely wrecked whatever ground was underneath it. Pharaoh said, listen, I understand you want to go to Amidbar because you want a place where there's nothing there and it's all desolate, so there's no distractions. Mitzrayim has become that. You might as well stay here. And that's why he said to him after that, you may as well stay in Mitzrayim. By this Makkah, Moshe Rabbeinu told I'm going to make a clear distinction. So Rechaim HaKadosh says that one thing's for sure is that these wild animals, they went, and as they came to the border of Goshen, they stopped and they turned back. But says the Rechaim HaKadosh, it's much more than that in the Pasuk. You could have on the same street a Jew and a Mitzri standing there, and you'd have a leopard or a lion coming down, running for the Mitzri. When it come past the Jew, it would be calm like a tame animal. And that was happening in this Pedus Bein Ami Ubein Yisrael, happening on exactly the same, in exactly the same place. Why was there Makkas Orev? So the Medrash Rabbah says that, like they send them to get Shkotzim and Rosh, they used to send them out, go find us some wild animals, we want some tusks, we want some hide from this and that animal. So Rabbi said, listen, you want them, I'll bring them for you, Bechinom. The Abarbanel says that they stole our children from us, and they behaved like wild animals. So Rabbi sent these wild animals to chop their children away from them. And the Kliyoka says, the Kali Soran Nimshuru Ki Choyo Is Heino. Rashi in Parashat Shemos tells us that when the midwives told Pare, by the time we arrive, they've already given birth. Kichoyo Seina, one thing is they are midwives themselves, or they're compared to chayos who don't need a midwife, like an animal doesn't need it. Where they're compared, in the brachos that Yaakov Avinu gave to Klal Yisrael, to his children, he called them, but like the Nimshel, to Aroyos, to Atzvi, and to other types of animals, and therefore, the Rebbe Shalom says, you treated my children in this way, who are Nimshelu lechayos, I'm going to now send chayos to come against you. In the Makkah of Deva, we know that every single animal died. Every single animal of the Mitzrayim died that was left out in the fields. And the Rabbanu Shalom said, "V'hiflo Hashem bein miknei Yisrael bein miknei Mitzrayim." I'm going to make a distinction between the two. And the pasuk uses an interesting lashon, which the Medrash Rabbah points out. "V'hiflo Hashem bein miknei Yisrael bein miknei Mitzrayim, v'lo yomus mikol livnei Yisrael dovor." And no thing will die from Klal Yisrael. And the terminology that normally the Torah would use, says the Medrash Rabbah, would say like this. The Rishon will make a distinction between the animals of the Yidden and the animals of Mitzrayim. The Lo Yomus, and they didn't die, Mikol Evnei Yisrael Echad, not even one died. But it says over here, the Lo Yomus Dover, no thing died, said the Medrash Rabbah, because it's telling us that Bebeisom Shalam Mitzrayim Nishmeru Kaleim. Not only did their animals die outside, but any ornaments of value that they had at home suddenly broke. So Mitzri came inside, his animals that he left outside in the field have died, and he comes into his house and he finds that the dvorim, the things, the ornaments that were of value in his house, also broke. The Makkah was inside as well. Hinted to that, the Pasuk says, but to Klal Yisrael, not only the animals didn't die, v'lo yomus dovor, nothing happened to anything that they owned. Another thing that happened is Pari after this said, Taka, there's a distinction. So he sent his servants out. Go have a look in my flocks and herds. Are they all dead? And they came back and said, no, there's many of them are still alive. So Pari said that. Well, the Ma'isa, what was it? Because I'll say those were animals that he'd stolen from the Eden. Those are the ones that stayed alive. So the Imriyama said that that's Pshat, why when it came after Makas Choshech, Pari said, fine, you can go, but your animals have to stay here. Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, you're going to send us and our animals, and you'll give us animals as well. So what do you mean you'll give us animals? We need Pari, we want to use his animals for our Avedus Hashem. Pshat is, you'll give us back the animals that belong to us, that you've still got in your Roshus, that they stayed alive over here because they belong to us. Why was the Medrash Rabbah says, what was the Midah Keneged Midah over here, that they forced Klal Yisrael to be their shepherds? The Rebbeinu said, listen, enough, you're not going to use them as your shepherds anymore. Another pshat is that we know Moshe, when Yosef took his brothers, he told them, tell Paro that you are Re'et Tzoyin, Gam Achon, Gam Aviseinu, and Paro then took them and forced them into slave labor. Therefore, they weren't able to look after their flocks and herds anymore, and the numbers diminished of what they had had. So in return for that, the Rebbeinu said, you made my children lose out from the assets they had of the animals, you'll have to lose yours. The muck, till when do we go? Till 2 minutes ago. Sorry? One more muck. Okay, so I'm going to skip then to the last one. I'll skip to the last one. Makas Bechoris had... No, you can use this at any time on Yom Tov. It doesn't have to be only Seder night. And you've got two nights. Makas Bechoris, there were a variety of different parts. Number one, the Bechorim, when they heard the warning, they came to their fathers and they said, listen, you're crazy. You send these Jews out. We're going to die. The Medrash says, the father said to them, listen, okay, so we'll lose you. We've got others. First of all, the mentality of the Mitzrim at that time. So they went running to Pari and they said, maybe he'll have Rachmanis. He's a Bechor himself. Pari says, I'll die and I'll have Mitzrayim destroyed, but these Jews, I'm not going to send the Eden out. That's the first thing. So the Bechorim decided to take up arms. Says the Midrash, they killed more than 600,000 Mitzrayim on that day. That's why Makas Bechoris is the only one that's got two names. Makas Bechoris. Because it wasn't just the Bechorim who died. There was a Makkah that the Bechorim caused as well. They went and killed other Mitzrayim. So it's got in it two Makkahs. The Makas Bechoris. That's part one. When it actually happened, the Paneach Roza writes, the one on the Shonim, Paneach Roza writes, not only the Bechorim died, and their bodies immediately began to rot, but there were Malachi Chavala that came into Mitzrayim at that time, and started beating up the other Mitzrayim. So you had the Mitzrayim waiting for Makas Bechorim to happen, and you can imagine a mother standing there, and Nebuchadnezzar Bechorim dies, at the same time she sees the rest of her family, suddenly, as if they're being beaten up, because the Malachi Chavala were actually giving them the Makas that they deserved as well. And we know, they put their Bechorim in the Yidin's house, they took the Yiddish Bechorim into their own homes. The Rebbeinu Shalom sorted out, the Medrash writes, there was an old woman who came to Moshe Rabbeinu, a Mitzri, and she said, listen, I no longer have a husband, I no longer have a son, and I no longer have any brothers, so nothing's going to happen in my house. But Chazal tell us, the Mitzri, what they used to do, is they used to make out of dough an image of the people that had died, and they would keep that as a remembrance on the wall, instead of a picture. That's how, even those things, says the Medrash, when it came to the Chatzos, they cracked and became into powder. So even she got that makkah. That the Bechorim, besides that, the Medrash says as well, that there were wild animals that went to the Botei HaKvaros and brought back the bones. So ein bayis asher ein shom mace. There wasn't a house in which there wasn't a mace, meaning not a mace, it just died now. But even they brought the Bechorim back from the Botei HaKvaros and put them in the houses where they had originally been. That was the Kolavim who did that. That's one of the Beis Halevi writes that as soon as the bodies had decomposed or started to decompose, there was an infection that actually emanated from them instantly on that night as well, and that killed other people. And that's why he says it's also called Makas Bechoris, because the Bechorim died, that the infection that was caused by the rotting bodies immediately caused that other people died as well. And as we know that all the Avodah Zarahs of theirs died, and that's what the Chassam Sofer says, that's how they afterwards we could take their clothes. How could Klal Yisrael take their clothes? They had images of Avodah Zarah on them, because the Chassam Sofer says that by Makas Bechoris they all got destroyed, or they rotted, or they melted, or they disappeared. So now these clothes are free from Avodah Zarah, and maybe that's why Klal Yisrael could take them afterwards. Tomorrow is going to be Tanis Bechorin. There are a few bombakashas on why Tanis Bechorim is Tanis, why we have this Tanis Bechorim. The pashtas is we commemorate Tanis Bechorim because the Bechorim were saved. But Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Neubach asks a few bombakash on that. If we commemorate him because they were saved, so it's a zman of kula, it's not a time of Yeshua. You make a suda, you don't make a tanis, number one. Number two, he says, who was involved there? The pashas, the kohenim, the levim, they weren't involved in it. So, but today, even a kohen and a levi fast. Secondly, we know the midrashim saved, it was always the oldest in the house, and even women fast. Agav, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Neubach used to bring back a piece of cake for his wife, who was a bechira from the siyim. Again, but that's a chumra. Generally, the ladies don't fast. Why not? If it's because of that, and he's got his knockout punch kasha is he says let's make a cheshbon. Whoever's a descendant of a bechor from then should fast, whether you're a bechor today or not. And if you're a bechor today, but you're a descendant of a tenth or fifth child from then, why are you fasting? So why am I fasting as a bechor today? The sofik, the rabbanon anyway. But if why should I fast? If it could be I'm a descendant from someone, everyone should find out their yichus, work out were you from someone then who was a bechor. If yes, fast. If not, not. Elamai, he says he wants to say a completely revolutionary pshat in what Tanis Bechorim is. And why is it that this is the Tanis where Klal Yisrael break it with the Siyam? He says a totally different pshat. It's got nothing to do with with then. He says, imagine what was going on Erev Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash. A Bechor stands there and he watches the whole of Klal Yisrael there in three groups. They go in, the Shir of the Levim, the Avodah of the Kohanim, the Kirvel HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they have, beyond anything that anyone could imagine throughout the entire year. And here on this Erev Pesach, that's what the Kohanim and Levim are involved in. And a Bechor stands on the side and he has such terrible Agmas Nefesh. Look what I could have had. Look what I could have been involved in had I not been involved in the Chatoim of the Egel, which because of that I lost the Kohanah. And a Bechor Pasha from Agmas Nefesh cannot eat. Hence, there became a Tanis for the Bechorim because of the Agmas Nefesh they had for not being able to eat. How are you menachem that Bechor? So Shlomo Zalman, there's only one way. You come to him and you tell him, Shlomo HaMelech said, Yekorohi mipninin. Say, Chazal, Yekorohi afir mikoyen godl shenichnes nefayv nefum. We say to the Bechor, what are you worried about? You can't do Avoida. What's the spitz Avoida of all Avoidas? That koyen godl who goes, lifnayv lifnim on Yom HaKadosh. No, I want to tell you this. Chazal tell us, Shlomo HaMelech said, there's something that's even bigger than that, that you, the Bechor, can be involved in. And that's Limud HaTorah. Memeila, to be Menachemim, we say, finish a Masechta and make a Siyam. And that's why this is the Tanis, or the only Tanis where we break it by having a Siyam.